First of all, he said that the transmission from Mars, etc., was never Reyulik. The signals we received were never Reyulik either. He said that the language they used was strange. Could it be they spelled phonetically as they did with us? He also said that Jupiter was the most difficult planet to contact. You will note later our own radio records, and know that we had the same experience. They would not attempt to use radio telephony with Mike, and they only used it once with us. Yes, the saucers have been here for centuries, and the moment we developed our crude radio communication, they utilized that also. Next headline, is part 3. Williamson, his story. It was a rainy afternoon in midsummer on the shores of Spirit Bear Lake. This was the northern land of Minnesota, USA. It had always been the same, I mused, as I stretched out on my cabin cot to read. The Redman, the Norseman, the Whiteman, they had all been captivated by the land of the sky blue water. Evidence is on every hand to prove that they all were acquainted with this country of mounds, mooring stones and logging camps. It was in 1951 and I was doing anthropological field work amongst the Chippewa Indians. I had already accumulated many legends of these wonderful woodland people. Woven into their age-old stories of hairy-faced men, jibais, ghosts, and nanobozho, were countless tales of the jinguin or that which shakes the earth. These earth rumblers might also be known as flying wheels or flying boats. The venerable old Chippewa men still tell of the sacred little people in a whisper. These highly intelligent little men were said to have appeared in ancient times to the people of the Chippewa nation. While they were with the Indians, they taught them better ways of living. If you ask the Indian why these wise beings are no longer seen, they will tell you, they don't come around much anymore since the white man came. After many months of hearing and recording these legends, I still never associated them in any way with the saucer phenomena that was puzzling the entire world. So, on this rainy afternoon, I began to read the pocketbook edition of Donald Kehoe's, Are the Flying Saucers a Real? A once started, I couldn't put it down until I had finished it. It continued to rain and I continued to read. He spoke of that day in Tucson, Arizona when thousands of people looked up to see something in the sky. I had been in Tucson when all of this happened and I had seen that something myself. Now facts began to snap into place in my mind. I had always believed that this Earth must certainly not be the only inhabited world in the entire universe. Why would the Creator place man, his crowning achievement, on one, rather small, insignificant planet? After all, there must be many planets and solar systems in outer space. Why would any Earth be created to spin around eternally void of life, to fulfill its mission as a noxious ball of poisonous gas full of methane and ammonia? I felt that other worlds were created for one purpose only, to be the abode of man. Yes, I could accept Kehoe's conclusion that the flying saucers were interplanetary in origin. They could be from planets in our own solar system, or they could even be from other solar systems. And then I seemed to hear uproarious laughter because I felt that the men of other worlds must think it humorous indeed that men of Earth on their little speck believe that the entire universe was created just for them. These men must also feel somewhat sad at the same time because such ignorance abounds. I now collected my legends and so-called myths in a more serious manner. Where before I had not deliberately looked for saucer stories, I now intentionally dug them out. At the Chippewa ice camps, the squaw dances, the country grocery store and in the fishing boats, we talked saucers, the Redman and I. Soon I discovered that the saucers existed in the tales of almost all the American Indian tribes and even in the legends of so-called primitive people all over the world. There were the flying boats of ancient India and the Orient. The flying boats and the Havmazufs of the Paiutes and Navajos in the American Southwest. The little wise people of the Sioux, Mandan, Cherokee and many other tribes. The strange, almost forgotten tales of Bozid, Atlantis, Lemuria, Mu, and Pan, the lost continents where men had the knowledge of flying ships. And in the Holy Bible itself I found an obvious reference to saucers in the Old Testament, Book of the Prophet Ezekiel, Chapter 1. I returned to Arizona in the spring of 1952 and decided to continue my research, hoping to find some of the answers, at least, to the age-old mystery of the saucers and wheels. What were they? Where did they come from? What, if anything, was inside? What were they here for? I knew that somewhere there were answers to these and other questions. I wanted to find out. I joined my wife in Prescott, Arizona. She had been conducting her own research in anthropology near Tucson, Arizona, and had her own across many strange tales also. We then began to read everything that had ever been published on the saucer phenomena. Kehoe, Hurd, Scully, Arnold, Palmer, and others. During the summer months the saucers were headlined again and again. This time they were seen over the Washington Capitol MAD, were even picked up on radar scopes. One evening in late summer, Mr. and Mrs. Alfred C. Bailey of Winslow, Arizona, came to visit with my wife and I in Prescott. I had corresponded with Al and Betty and knew them to be people interested in ancient history, philosophy, and anthropology. Al was employed by the Santa Fe Railways Company, but antiquities had always fascinated him and he made quite a hobby of it. We discussed my research work in the northern United States and what I had discovered while there. Inevitably, the conversation got around to saucers. Neither the Baileys nor my wife and I were absolutely certain as to what they might be. We did know, however, that the so-called official statements regarding them were very absurd and only confused the entire matter. A noted South American scientist claimed they were corpuscles passing over the retina of the eye. Another said they were seeking cotton puffballs floating in the New Mexico skies from Texas. Others said they were flying hubcaps, tow targets, weather instruments, temperature inversion, etc. We both had always believed that other worlds must be inhabited. Even most astronomers agree on that point. So, we decided that if the saucers were piloted by intelligent beings, they must be wiser than we. They must be, for they have developed spacecraft and we have not. Therefore, they would be able to understand our language by now and our code systems as well. This seems difficult for most people to understand. They ask, but how can the Saucerians speak English? Let me say it is not impossible by any means. We speak a language, don't we? And we learned it as children by hearing it spoken. As we get older it is harder for us to learn a language, but we can learn it, nevertheless. Are we to limit them to our own intelligence? We have already proven that they are much wiser than we. But let us say for a moment that they are only as intelligent as we are, perish the thought. They then could learn our language in about 6 months by merely listening to it. Anthropology can explain this fact easily. If one goes into a foreign land and wishes to learn the language of that land, he finds someone who is bilingual to teach him. However, if no one there understands him and he doesn't understand them, he has no alternative but to listen to them day in and day out. After about 6 months, this varies with different individuals, of course, he will begin to know what they are talking about. Sometime later he will learn to speak the language himself. So, you see, it is not too difficult to understand how they can speak our languages or know our code systems. If there were intelligent beings in those saucers, they must be observing our world, listening to everything we say by monitoring our radio broadcasts. We wondered what their purpose in coming to Earth was. We didn't think it conceivable that with countless planets in space they would desire our beloved Earth that we have contaminated for so many centuries. Besides, if they have been coming here for so long, why didn't they invade and conquer us when we were quite harmless with our bow and arrow playthings? Certainly they wouldn't wait until we had developed atomic weapons of war. Therefore, we knew that they had not traversed millions of miles of space for conquest. We spent the rest of our evening together in Prescott, enjoying a lion supper in town and entertaining ourselves with certain games and parlor tricks. One amusing pastime known to many families as a diverting trick is automatic writing. We thought it would be fun to try it. We had heard that the idea was for one or two people to hold a pencil over a sheet of paper and then see if it would write some sort of a message. Although there are some who seriously consider the writing obtained in this manner to be genuine spirit communication, we never had such thoughts in our minds. We were just doing what many people will do in their own parlor for an evening's entertainment. In truth, since our dinner, We had just about forgotten the elusive sources, and now were having a good time. What we did not know was the people of other worlds were watching and waiting for a sign of receptivity on the part of their brothers on Earth, standing by and ready with their superior equipment to contact any and all who sought the answer to their presence in the skies of Earth. Little did we know what we had started with our simple little amusement. It was to change our entire life. If what we were receiving through automatic writing was true, then there would be answers to many questions. Had we, through our intense desire to know more about the sources, actually contacted the intelligence behind them? It didn't seem at all possible. But how could we be sure? For centuries, man on Earth has pondered the debatable question: is there life on other worlds? If so, and this life is human, are the homes and cities where men live, love and work? We looked up into black space, pinpointed with millions of these worlds, and wondered. Next headline, Part 4, Alfred C. Bailey, his story. During my school years, and for reasons not known or understood, I was at variance with my instructors and textbooks. I had a strong tendency to argue and disbelieve both the teachers and their many theories that they taught as fact. As I look back now, throughout my entire life, I can see where man-made ideas and opinions have been relegated to the back of my mind. However, it was always easy for me to accept ideas of a universal nature, and to reject or disregard effect ideas that were being taught. Perhaps during my grade school years this unknown factor was the thing that made my life so hard. After entering high school I found it much easier to get along even if I did not completely agree with my instructors. In 1933 I met Dr. F. E. Dewart, a chiropractor, of Peru, Indiana. Until this time my concept of chiropractic was as hazy and biased as most young people's. Dr. Dewart explained to me in concise and simple language the theory of his profession. It was so natural and reasonable that it immediately intrigued me. From his simple explanation of how and why the human body worked, I decided to study this science. In the fall of 1933, I entered the Palmer School of Chiropractic. I did not complete the prescribed course of study, but did learn enough of it to know that certain universal laws as taught there apply to almost every phase of scientific research and to life itself. The philosophy is based upon the understanding and the acceptance of the existence of a universal intelligence. It starts with that great universal principle of cause. As long as that part of their philosophy, upon which their science is based, is kept in mind, they or anyone else following a line of scientific research cannot be far wrong. Any scientific study based on that great principle of the universe studying effects proceeding from cause instead of trying to arrive at causes by studying effects cannot but be well based in fact instead of theory. Even though I did not finish my chiropractic study and failed to enter practice, I am glad that I attended their school. I learned to understand the laws of the universe a little more. 6 or 7 years ago I broke with a dogmatic religion. From that time until now I have in no way felt lost but learned that no religion offered all the necessary answers to the universe. At least, none of them answered my innermost feelings. I liked the American Southwest. It had an exceptional climate and good employment was to be had in my field of railroading. Winslow, Arizona, is a typical railroad town. I have worked for the Santa Fe Railway Company for many years, and now serve them as a conductor. Although I had little formal education in science, I read many books on various subjects. Several of these books spoke of the flying saucers. Soon I began to believe that these strange sky objects might be spacecraft from other inhabited planets. The writings of many others then began to fill a gap in my mind to help me understand our universal belonging. Many of my friends and co-workers in the past few years have been surprised by my positive statements that these saucers were spaceships or observation craft from larger spaceships. Since I had never placed much reliance on scientific pronouncements of the uninhabitable nature of the planets in our solar system, it seemed only proper and reasonable that they were visitors from neighboring planets. Everything went along in this manner for several years. I was in no way a flying saucer fanatic. I had accepted them for what many people now know them to be. One day last summer, 1952, we received a letter from George H. Williamson, an anthropologist living in Prescott, Arizona. He knew our mutual interest and said that if we were ever in Prescott, we should come to see him and his wife. This letter was ignored for almost 2 months. Then, one day, we decided to take the time to make the somewhat long drive through Flagstaff and Williams to the small, mountain town of Prescott. We enjoyed a fine drive through some of the most beautiful scenery in the Southwest. We found Mr. and Mrs. Williamson to be very interesting young people. We discussed the legends he had collected amongst the Indian people, and we mentioned the flying saucers. We then looked over many clippings and numerous reports of this strange serial phenomena. After our dinner, we decided to play a few parlor games. I had heard of automatic writing but had never actually tried it or even seen it done. Since my knowledge of it was small, I had never really formed any opinion regarding it. After all, we were just performing a parlor trick. Or were we? Two people were supposed to grasp a pencil held over a sheet of paper. The moment we started our stunt, the most amazing and incredible information began to appear on the paper. My wife Betty and I had hardly ever mentioned saucers, and certainly we never discussed automatic writing. At once, she was confused and somewhat upset. Before she had met the Williamsons, she thought she had married a crazy man because of my weird interests. Now she was certain she had just met two more candidates for the state sanatorium. But she was curious and waited. We didn't have been long to wait to see proof of the reality of our contact. As I stated, I had always believed the saucers to be interplanetary in origin, but like everyone else, I only knew what could be found in the daily papers and the magazines. After discovering that Mr. and Mrs. Williamson had found ancient legends and accounts dealing with strange sky objects in the lore of primitive people, I really sat up and began to take notice. It was most interesting to know that these people of a bygone age had preserved knowledge of the very thing that today was causing such worldwide attention. We realize that mature people do not take the results of parlor tricks very seriously. At first, neither did we. But the nature of the messages demanded that we investigate more thoroughly. I feel that many ideas and impressions come to certain receptive minds that could only have their origin in that vast storehouse of all knowledge, the universe. Perhaps many of our great discoveries came about in this way. It is the explorer in man that drives him ever onward to new knowledge of this universe. There are many things in this report that will not be readily acceptable to many. This is to be expected of any publication dealing with the flying saucers. The term saucer itself is a laughter-provoking word. How ironic this is. The greatest happening in the history of mankind, and it was ushered into the world as a joke by many. These saucers that fly in our skies come to us from that great beyond that we have not yet begun to explore. What could they teach us? We anxiously awaited their answers. A next headline is part 5. Parlor Diary. Remember that this is a documentary report, and truth is almost always stranger than fiction. All happenings listed herein are true and factual. Some of the methods used to make contact are certainly alien to our present ways of thinking. The radio diary which follows this section will be readily acceptable to many, and will give them an opportunity to make the necessary links to reality as we understand reality. This report contains a timely message. We have decided to tell it exactly as it happened and to fictionalize none of the story. If the reader refuses to accept recent developments in the field of parapsychology and the work of Dr. Ryan at Duke University, that is his or her privilege. But the fact that there is such a thing as extrasensory perception cannot be denied. Many well-known scientists and universities are conducting experiments in telepathy. They realize that if we probe deeper into the man non-physical, we may eventually discover more about the fundamental nature of the human being and his place in the universe, where he stands in relation to the entirety. When F.A. Mesmer first brought mesmerism, now known as hypnotism, into notice in Vienna, about 1775, he was pronounced a charlatan. For many years, hypnotism was considered a magician's trick or the work of the devil. There are many people today who still consider it as such, but medical associations have recommended its use to physicians and dentists. and it is being used daily throughout the world by reputable men of science. Automatic writing itself belongs to the order of mediumship known as mental, but at first sight it appears to be of the physical order. One has only to remember how difficult it is to cultivate the art of writing to realize that at all times the cooperation of the individual's own mind, although not necessarily of his consciousness, is necessary. Automatic writing has often been produced by medical men from the patient's subconsciousness, and it is reasonable to conclude that the medium's subconsciousness is operative when such writing is impelled by an outside communicator. Researchers in the psychic phenomena field have claimed that this writing can either be from the medium's subconsciousness or it can be from some disembodied entity. If this is so, then we can understand how telepathy in the form of automatic writing could be accomplished between two living beings in the same plane of existence, but located in widely separated areas. Distance, whether 2 miles or 2 million miles, would not be an important factor. We know now that this telepathic contact can be made with human beings of outer space without the use of my device such as a pencil. However, this initial contact needed something whereby those receiving the messages would not think it was the product of their own minds. They could more readily accept what was written down in front of them in black and white. In his book, A Men of Other Planets, A. Kenneth Hoare, lecturer at Hayden Planetarium, says, "We do not know all that there is to know about the nature of the universe, and we are only beginning to learn a little about the science of the human mind or soul and its operations, powers and functions. The distance from the Earth to Mars is nothing where the transmission of the force of attraction is concerned. It is almost insignificant in the case of light, a few minutes sufficing for a wave of light to traverse those millions of miles. Experiments made in the domain of magnetism equally prove that space is nothing for the willpower of a mesmerist, and one day it may be possible, through some great strides in psychology, to establish communication between two beings on two different worlds. At different stages in the reception of the following messages, we altered our method of contact at the request of the space intelligences. As stated above, our first contact was through automatic writing using a sheet of paper and a lead pencil. The second method was employed to make it easier on us, and to speed up the transmission of words. We took a large sheet of ordinary wrapping paper and drew on it the letters of the alphabet and the numbers from 1 through 10. This still did not prove entirely satisfactory, so we made what we later called the board. It consisted of the same letters and numbers, plus the words yes and no and a plus sign on the right side and a minus sign on the left side. These signs indicated positive and negative. This was much easier than holding a pencil for a long period of time. A glass tumbler was inverted and used as a locator. It moved over the paper surface with considerable ease. Since the letters and figures were now arranged in a circular form, the transmission was speeded up greatly. Messages received in the above manner follow: the 2nd of August 1952, Massar to Ceres. After much questioning, we learned that Massar was the planet Mars and Ceres was our planet Earth. It is interesting to note that Ceres or Ceres means repetition in the ancient Chaldean language. By your year of 1956, there must be a new Ceres. Bell Flight 9, Crystal Bells are the saucers, should land on Ceres in 1956. Organize yourselves. There must be peace of mind. You are all for a purpose. You have a destiny. Don't fight universal truth. You are a dead civilization. We want your cooperation. Time is limited. I am Na 9 of Solar X Group. I am the leader of a contact group. We were seen over Southern California last night and early today. Sunday, 3 August, newspapers carried stories of Air Force jet fighter bases being alerted for instant pursuit of saucer objects. They had been seen over the Mojave Desert at 11:45 p.m., Friday night, 1 August, and Saturday morning at 12:14 a.m., 2 August. Our contact had told us this information before we knew they had been observed. Good and evil forces are working now. Organization is important for the salvation of your world. Contact us as soon as you can. There is a mass of planets in the organization. Why are your peoples unbelievers? You have begun the research. The time is up to you. Look up into the skies above you, don't lose contact with each other. We are friends of those interested, but we are not interested in those of the carnal mind. By that we mean the stupid preservation of self, disregarding the will of the creative spirit and his sons. Your world has been observed for over 75,000 years. A survey was begun long ago of this planet Earth. How can we deny the eternal verities, life, God, the Creator's place in the divine scheme? How can we sit by and watch the progress of evil men on this blob, the Earth? Come now, if you wish the answers that all mankind has been searching for since time began. You are wishing for these answers. Our group will be a duplicate of yours. We represent the people of outer space, you represent your world's errors. Cycles are computed by a group for this known as timekeepers. We have not wanted to interfere with men of Sarah's before. All men must make their progress wherever they are. But we cannot stand by and see another waste. We are all of the same creation. Warning. There will soon be a destructive blast to be felt on Sarah's. This is of your own manufacture. Evil planetary men, who abound, will attempt contact with evil men of Sarah's for destruction. The good men of Sarah's must unite with the Ben men of universe. A Ben means good. Great destruction can be caused by your H-bomb. It could all come too soon. Some destruction will come for sure. We have been alerted. We repeat, it is most important that you organize. Jupiter 9999, Ankar 22 speaking, Bell flight from Jupiter joining Massa. Jupiter now leading group. Mercury, Morning Star, Venus, Andromeda 26470 and Wolf 359 are also in group. There are all he, males, in our group. Yon must have a group for contact. Band yourselves together. Kedarlaku speaking, I am head of Interplanetary Council Circle on Mastercraft. I am elected from the universe. Why don't you all go eat now? We were wondering when you were going to wake up to the fact you are hungry. We have stomachs too, and we are empty. Meet you here at 8:30 tonight. Signing off. We had eaten early and were now ready for a light lunch. The above shows that the saucer intelligences have a sense of humor. This was evidenced several times during contact with them. At 8:30 p.m. we again received messages. It takes much mind power for our thoughts to reach you on Sarah's in this manner. Again we say that you must be very well organized amongst yourselves. For better contact we suggest a powerful receiving set or radio. You should have your own set as our set is radically different. But we can reach you in this manner. Our people have trod your byways. Have you not seen us? Bell Flight 9 is a Massar flight to Sarah's. Massar means Mars. The name Mars has been passed down to you in legend, but it is known to us as Massar. By 1956 Bell Flight 9 will come to Sarah's. It may have come secretly, Editor. We have chosen you as you have chosen us and we know what your purpose is. It has been known since the very beginning. You all have a job to do for this Earth. Some chosen ones will be removed from Sarah's. Separate black from white, races are not meant here, and only a few will be saved. This is to preserve Earthian thought beginnings. Changes can take place, however. Yes, there will be a new Earth. There is much we must cope with. Your actions and plans will be guided by the powers of the universe with the creative spirit's guidance. The evil forces of darkness will tell you that you can die for all of the research you are doing. They will say you can be destroyed, so Thea Benner can never accomplish a plan. At 9:40 p.m. we received the following, Ankar 22 speaking of outer space contact. You have read about the recent explosions on Massa. These were not of our doing but were caused by your atomic experimentation. This caused extreme volcanic eruptions on Massa. Our bells are sources. Crystal bells. Mankind must awaken or there will be an end to your civilization. More sincere ones will be added to your group as time goes on. In December 1951, Mr. Tsunkos Araki, director of the Mars section of the Oriental Astronomical Association and lecturer at the Municipal Planetarium in Osaka, Japan, observed strange phenomena on Mars. There was a strange bright spot on the Tithonius Locus and a large snowstorm over the south polar regions. He said that the theory that it was caused by Martian volcanic eruption or fire seemed most likely.